Welcome into the Sports Objective as we're going to be talking March Madness. We got a lot of cool stuff in the second half hour. We have a great interview where I sit down on deck with Randy Hood, the coach of UNCW, the baseball team. The Pirates are going on the road and taking on the Seahawks. That should be a great guy. And a guy that knows a lot about the Seahawks for the certainly for the basketball court, and that's Coach Mac McCarthy. Coach, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. This is my time of year. We got March Madness. We've got NASCAR. We've got the Masters coming up. We got opening day of baseball. It's a great time for a sports fan.
Have you ever thought about doing a radio show, coach, or a podcast? Because you're like a lot of us that love different sports, so you could definitely do it.
I've done a bunch of radio shows through the years. I actually took over a NASCAR show in Richmond after I left VCU and did it every Saturday from a barbecue restaurant. I was in heaven. And then the 2 years right after I left VCU, I did a full-time radio show in Chattanooga. I just did an hour a day, Monday through Thursday, and had guests on the road with Coach Mac kind of thing. And that was really a lot of fun. And then I had one here with the Pirate
Right.
Radio. I was the
That's
next
one.
level. We did that for several years. So I
Yeah.
dabbled in the radio business, but I enjoy talk radio. I drive a lot and I listen to talk radio the entire time.
Yeah, and also joining us here on the show would be me, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, being
Well, I was
Dave
getting ready
just
to.
introduced me. Yeah. But
I was getting ready
Coach
to get you.
Dave, have you hooked Coach Mack up with Mike Ray? They you need to have Coach on Mike Ray's podcast on Talk
We'll
Racing.
do that. Yeah, I do another show called Talking Racing with Mike Ray. We'll have you on, Coach. It will be an honor to have you on Talk NASCAR.
I love some NASCAR now. We can do hours on hours with NASCAR.
That sounds a lot of fun. We'll see how. And by the way, did you know that they're actually going to bring back racing to Rockingham?
What division?
It's actually not with NASCAR, the Cars Tour. The folks that hired me to do announce at Wake County Speedway and now with Southern National, they took it over. And as far as managing it, they're going to try to do a few events a year. But they pushed it. It was supposed to be this past weekend, and they pushed it to around how it's actually October the 30th. They had to work on the tire. The tire was just not right for the conditions of the, I guess, the
So
asphalt.
it's the what tour? The Cars tour?
Cars Tour, it's more like I hate to say minor leagues, but it's a very reputable tour with a lot of up and coming drivers, and
Right.
they but anyway, it's coming
Well,
up. They're gonna
a few years ago, NASCAR went back to Rockingham, the truck series.
right
I don't, evidently it didn't do well, it didn't draw well, who knows?
I don't know. The thing that they have now is NASCAR, not to get on a tangent, but NASCAR kind of lost its roots. But then, Coach, you probably heard that they Bruton Smith and Company, they actually are going to refurbish, I guess, renovate Nashville, their speedway. And so they're going to have some NASCAR events there. So that's really cool to hear.
The thing I didn't understand about Nashville, is it the old fairgrounds track or is it the asphalt track that they built more recently?
I thought they said fairgrounds, but I'll have to double check on that. I'm not sure.
Well, that Nashville track hadn't even been there that long ago, the asphalt track.
No, it was yeah, no, it was I mean, it was a cement track. It was the built like Dover,
Yeah.
and they had some great racing there. And I never saw the races on the old fairgrounds track, but I certainly remember when they ran there.
Yeah, I miss the days when people are like, well, I thought we were talking basketball, but I miss the days. I was a huge NASCAR fan of the 80s and 90s and in the early 2000s, and I got out of it like a lot of people did. But I miss the days of obviously, where it was not only Charlotte and one race at Darlington, but you had two races at Darlington, you had two races at Rockingham, you had North Wilkesboro, of course, Richmond, Barnesville. You had the Busch Series going to Hickory. You had the Busch Series running up at South Boston. You had the Busch Series on a Saturday night in Myrtle Beach. You talk about a redneck heaven.
I love South Boston. I love South Boston. Best fried bologna anywhere.
Fried bologna and people talk weird.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They say did it instead of
They,
did it.
I'm trying to find out the answer for your coach here, Mike Ray. I'm texting him, so he's going to give me the answer right here. But Talking Racing with Mike Ray, we'll have you on. Do you have a pick who's going to win this the cup this year? Who do you think is going to win? Who do you like if you had to pick one right now?
You know, I always kind of pick with my heart instead of my head. So I'm a Harvick fan. So I think after last year where he kind of dominated everything and then didn't do well in the playoffs, maybe karma will come back around because he was so good all year. But I tell you, the guy to look out for, the guy that would scare me if I was everybody else is Kyle Larson. He has come back with a vengeance, and he can win on a lot of different tracks. And it wouldn't shock me to see Hendrick go back to back, which is kind of weird as out of it as they've been over the last decade almost.
About another, speaking of the Kyle show, we have Kyle Barber, Kyle Larson.
Yeah.
The one that I would have to say that comes to mind, I think he's due. He's already won.
Kyle
one,
Petty.
No, Kyle Busch. You're in the wrong decade, my friend. The wrong century. Kyle Busch, I think, is one that.
He certainly got the talent, and they have a great team. But they were just way off last year. I'm gonna have to see more out of him before I could pick him as a favorite right now. Of course, I don't like the guy, so that helps a little bit.
But what about that up and comer? Do you guys think that up and comer Jeremy Mayfield will ever reach his potential?
I don't know, but I know he's really good in commercials.
Yeah. Mayfield, what's he doing with commercials now? Obviously,
No. Back when he was driving, actually.
Yeah, we all know what happened to Mayfield, unfortunately, for him.
Yeah, sadly.
I hope he can get his life together. He's still having a lot of legal issues.
I know we're supposed to talk basketball, but have I told you guys about the first race I ever went to?
No.
Tell us.
I avoided going to races for years, and this is a little bit of a story, but I think you all will appreciate it. We can talk about March Madness as long as you want to, but my boss was heavily involved in it, went to races, knew everybody. Before it was fashionable, he knew everybody in the pit crew. He knew the owners. He knew everybody, and he tried to get me to go. Every year, I'd make up an excuse. Well, one summer, 1984, I ran out of excuses, and we took off to Talladega. They took off to Talladega, and I didn't know that the reason that I was invited every year was I don't drink, so I was the designated driver, and they certainly were drinking. So we got in a pool on the way up there and picking drivers and putting $20 in, and I'm thinking, this is good. So as we got closer, and you guys being NASCAR fans will understand this, I didn't, they said, listen, it's your first time. We've got one ticket on the front row, and we're going to let you have it. I said, this is the nicest thing anybody's ever done. We've been on the front row at a NASCAR race. Talladega, I know, is famous. And so I don't have any, I don't have earplugs. I don't have headphones. I don't have anything. After two laps, my face looked like a black and white cookie. The left side was completely covered with rubber and everything else. And I couldn't hear anything from then on for the next week. And I could only see them for about 60 feet this way and 60 feet this way as they came by. That was the last I saw them. And then in 40 some seconds, here they came again. And I'm sitting there thinking, these son of a guns. But Earnhardt won his first race that day in the Wrangler car for Richard Childress. And
wow.
I had Earnhardt in the pool, so all was right, and I was absolutely hooked, and I've been going to races ever since.
And, Coach, by the way, I found out, thanks to our good friend Mike Ray, again, listen to his podcast, Talking Racing with Mike Ray. It is the old track, Bruton Smith. I was right. He's going to spend some money, plus new syndicate includes Earnhardt Jr. going to spruce her up some. That's what Mike said to him.
Awesome.
I'm really happy about that. Now, how about Junior? Finding his dad's Busch car? Speaking of sprucing it up, and he's going to lead that for Darlington in May. That's going to be awesome.
I saw that. I had not seen that paint scheme, but that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he has a few dollars to spend on stuff.
So,
right?
What's going to happen at Darlington in May?
He Junior actually found the car. He bought the car. I don't know when exactly he bought the car, but he had it restored. The Busch car from the 80s, Coach?
Yeah, early.
I think
80s.
It was the Coach for the 80s. Yeah. And they fixed it all up. And he's actually going to lead that, kind of be like the pace car at the beginning of the Darlington race.
Okay, that's cool.
That's fun.
Yeah, so yeah, I love Junior. So miss him, but I guess, you know, smart that when once you get that concussion, then I understand why.
You don't want to end up. They've never determined that that's what happened with Dick Trickle with a suicide, but I would be willing to bet you he had an undiagnosed CTE. Nah.
I think so, because that whole story with Dick Trickle made no sense other than that's only the guy won more races than, what was it, a well over coach, several hundred, a few hundred races. He won all of the short tracks around the country.
Yeah.
And the guy was very special. He's the kind of guy that it didn't matter what surface, name a time, place, when, where, I can get behind the wheel and I can beat you. And
the Cup Series. Nice. He could never win in the Cup Series. Did have a... Did he end up with two or three Busch Series wins? I remember when he finally won in the Busch Series, but that even took years. He very successful on the short tracks. But yeah, his suicide's a weird story. Coach Mac, if you're not familiar with it, look it up.
I will.
So, Coach, let's talk about a more. Well, I don't know if it's a happier time, but certainly at least we had, as we said pre-show, at least we have the tournament. Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on, as we're bringing you on tonight, we can talk about anything you want. For this particular case with March Madness, we're already hearing, I think it was at, what is it, Bubba gave me those 2,300, but there's only six positives out of 2,300. So considering the year we've been through, that's a good start, right?
Yeah, good start. Holding our breath like everybody that we don't have more problems. I actually talked to a couple of the officials that were involved in that six folks that were quote unquote sent home. I don't know if any of them actually went home, but yeah, they're out of the tournament, which is sad for those guys. And you know, those guys are just like the players and coaches. You know, they missed out on last year's tournament, and this year now those six are going to miss out on the tournament again. And doing the Colonial tournament a couple of weeks ago, like we were talking about, you know, those Hofstra guys, I mean, they never get that back. I mean, those guys, a couple of them are on the team that played this year, but there were 11 teams that won their conference tournaments that didn't get to go, that actually won the conference tournament. And at least they have that. They have, we won our last game kind of thing and have that feeling. But I'm just holding my breath. I hope we get through this thing. I hope all the games get played, but I'm not going to bet on it.
There's what, 67? Is it 67 games, if my memory serves me right, for the whole tournament, start to finish? So the thing is Kyle, I was telling Coach right before you joined us pre-show, is the very fact that the first weekend, this week, if you will, is the toughest week. Everything else they can move or maneuver things, but it's really difficult when you have all those games the first weekend to move, shuffle things around, right, Coach?
Yeah, and even the teams, you know, some of them went straight from their conference tournaments to Indianapolis to go ahead and get into the protocol. But you have Virginia, for instance, last year they would have been one of the top seeds, and they're not going to go until Friday to play a Saturday game. Their first practice will be Thursday. They're doing some individual workouts and that kind of thing, but they won't get their whole team together until Thursday. And as unpredictable as the season has been, this tournament might be more unpredictable. I'm sitting here looking at my bracket and I'm thinking, why did I do all this chalk? That makes no sense given what I know about this thing.
Coach, you just somebody who maybe haven't been paying enough attention, like myself and other fans out there. You just said something interesting that caught my ear. You say UVA is not going until Friday to play their game Saturday.
Right.
So normally the first two rounds are on Thursday and Friday. Have they stretched them out this year?
They had to bump it back in order to get all the testing in. So they wanted to keep Selection Sunday where it was. So the playing games will be Thursday, and then the first round will be Saturday and Sunday. And then it kind of falls back. It's still not going to be the same. It'll be kind of offset the whole time until they get to the Final Four.
I think what they may find out, obviously, you know, you do your Thursday and Friday, you can have your Saturday and Sunday games for the Field of 32 and, you know, all that. But I bet you having the first round on Saturday and Sunday, I bet you the ratings are going to be killer with everybody being home.
Yeah, I would think so, because Thursday and Friday, as you all know, those are the two of the best days of the tournament, where you see the Cinderellas and the buzzer beaters and all that, and having them on the weekend where everybody can see them. Of course, I think everybody takes off from work anyway, but the regular fans that maybe don't follow it quite as closely as we do. Yeah. I think the ratings are going to be outstanding. As long as everybody can figure out where the hell True TV is on their cable.
Hey, Coach, I'm with Dish, and they always add it to, even if you don't have that package.
That's nice.
And then they're in March Madness and tell you where you can find each game. So you can give a little plug to Dish Network for that.
That's yeah, Coach, what about one of my dreams would be if I could. I actually used to have a guy on our show, radio show with March Madness. He told us that the busiest time in Vegas for a sports book is March Madness. Yeah. I would love for the fellas. I wish we could obviously have a plane ride there for a few days, go there, watch the tournament. But he said, look, I'll be on your show anytime, but please don't call me during that weekend. It's the busiest weekend of the year. So I didn't realize that until he told me that.
Yeah, the sports books in Vegas are just slammed. People camp out and sit there and watch every single game. And biggest days of the year that first weekend. Outside the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but in terms of it being busy, probably more so than the Super Bowl. Because the Super Bowl, you're just betting on one game. They have so many damn games to bet on. I would imagine it's just a headache.
Yeah, I would think so too. Although just an individual day, maybe with all the different games, maybe it would be something similar.
Well, the prop bets too for the Super Bowl, right? If this happens, that's where I get all confused. Prop bets just confusing. I'm not a gambler, so I love to go to Vegas and all, but I'm not one to sit there for 24 hours and I'm terrible at poker, so that's not my forte. But Coach, what do you as far as the different? I haven't really had a chance to look at the brackets for the very reason of what you said. I thought about that. I love to sit down the brackets, but the fact the games are kind of pushed back, I was going to look at it more, to be honest, tomorrow. So I was glad that you were coming on to kind of give us some insight of the four regions. And even though all the games are, let's start there. All the games are going to be in the state of Indiana.
Right.
We can say that, right. And a lot of them are going to be in the big city of Indianapolis, but you also have games at other venues outside of Indianapolis as well.
Yeah, the play-in games will be at Purdue and the University of Indiana in Bloomington and West Lafayette. And then the four venues there in town, you've got Lucas Oil, and then you've got the Pacers facility downtown. You've got Hinkle, which is very cool, where Butler is and where Hoosiers was filmed and all that, or allegedly took place. And then there's a Fairgrounds Arena, which is supposed to be really nice too. I don't know the name of that building, but I was talking to the Virginia Tech coaches a little bit, and they are pumped about playing in Hinkle. They play the first game. They play the first game of the tournament, I think, and they play it in Hinkle with the big crew, with Rafferty and Nance and that group. So they're excited about that and all the history that goes along with Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Coach, I had one person ask me, so I thought this would be a man on the street question. A friend of mine doesn't understand how Appalachian State, and I guess it's because of their season before, but they win the tournament, they win the Sun Belt. How are they in the first four when they won the Sun Belt? But I guess it's because of the regular season they're taking on, I know, Norfolk State.
Yeah, I think they were a 7 seed, so that they were going to be a 7 seed in their conference tournament. So, and that's in division, so that was toward the bottom or middle of the league, I guess at best. So that they were going to be a 16 seed, just like Drexel, for instance. The championship game in the Colonial was 6-8. So whoever won that game was going to be a 16 seed. And then the games in the play-in games rotate. There are always some 16 seeds there, and then the others are 11s or 12s, because they didn't want to send all the worst teams every single year to that spot. So, this year, I think some of them are 11s and some of them are 16s, and that's how they got to that.
Coach, we're talking about the COVID-19 situation. Want to get your thoughts on, if you can, last week. Duke starts to just shows you for Duke's season, and particularly, they were up and down all around because of COVID. Coach K gets COVID. Then you have where they start playing well in the tournament, the first two games. Next thing you know, they have a COVID positive, and they're not only out of the tournament, which also means they're out of the NCAA, but that's just a real strange turn of events. So, but it describes that's an individual case of what happened for many teams this year.
So many of these stories, you know, you had teams that didn't play for 2 months. You had teams with multiple 3-week pauses. Duke hadn't had a positive among their team all year, not one positive among the student athletes since they started back to school, and then they have one in the tournament. It's just crazy. I did a game with I'll tell you the team, not the individual, but Towson had all kind of problems this year in the Colonial, and every single player but one had COVID. Okay. Picture that. So those guys miss a lot, but they had the one guy who didn't have COVID missed 56 days with contact tracing. He missed more time than any of the players who had. Ted Valentine is calling me right now. Sorry about that. He's one of the six officials who's not going to be able to call. But this poor kid, he must have the worst luck of anybody, because his teammates who had COVID all missed less time this year than he did. And there were so many stories like that. And just like Virginia this week, you think, okay, they're on pause. Well, are they practicing? Are they not practicing at all? But it wasn't even like that. It was some kids could practice, some kids couldn't practice. There were teams in the Colonial that never had 10 players at practice this year. So they couldn't even scrimmage. They couldn't play 5-on-5. And you wonder why there were all these, you know, crazy swings. And Clemson plays great one night and they get beat by 30 the next night. And, you know, when you realize what they all went through, it's amazing they played successfully at all.
Coach, Bubba's actually Team Dizzy this week. He's got his family down in Orlando.
Oh, wow.
And he's got a tough assignment this week, but he's watching the show and he chimes in. He says, Dustin Kearns has done a heck of a job in his 2 years at Boone after doing a great job with Presbyterian. Love his taking the stairs mentality.
Yeah, Dustin is a really good guy. More people are going to get to know Dustin. He was he came through the Tennessee and Clemson group and was at Presbyterian. I did a couple of his games when he was at Presbyterian in the ACC network playing in Blacksburg, and just one of the real likable guys and a really talented coach. It's not a surprise. It may be a surprise how quickly he got to the NCAA, but not a surprise to anybody in the business that he is having success.
And another one of Bubba's favorite people is back in the tournament. And that's Loyola Chicago, but the Ramblers are back, and so is Sister Jean. I forgot, Coach, I know that was 3 years ago. I forgot all about Sister Jean, but she's back, and I'm sure if she had a fan club, Bubba and I will be in it, but that's a great story, isn't it?
101 years old, and she has a ride. She's going to the tournament.
That's real. If you're 101, if I'm alive, I hope I can go to any kind of tournament and know where and know that there's a coach and know there's a tournament going on. But I'm very excited for them. That's what makes, and I'll just say this, I absolutely love Coach Mike Houston. I love college football. But the reason why I love basketball so much and college baseball is the very fact of March Madness, this whole tournament. That's why I want to, not only the money for the financial piece of things, for the Olympic sports and all the athletic departments, we know all about that. But this is the fun time when you see the upsets to happen. And if you pull for that team, it kills you when you lose. When you lose to the, you know, a 15 seed or 16 seed like Virginia did a couple years ago, was it 3 years ago? But the very fact that happens is really cool for the big picture of things. But as far, because it's like if you know that, like for in football, you know Alabama, Clemson always are going to be there, you know. But it would be nice for college football people to take a look at what college basketball has been doing for many years, where they have conference champions, you have at-large, you have a lot of drama, a lot of great storylines, just like we're talking about. If it was college football, and I'm not going to get off this tangent very long, but Sister Jean would never even – we wouldn't even know about Sister Jean, like a great lady like that, if it were not for March Madness.
So many great stories, and I'm afraid some of the stories will probably get glossed over because of COVID and cancellations and and guys testing positive or contact tracing or whatever. I hope the good stories don't get overlooked, and there are 68 teams in the tournament, and they all have something special about them. And normally we're dissecting that, but right now we're worried about, are we going to get to the games? And hopefully we'll still have time to celebrate some of those great stories.
One of the things that's been big, Coach, this year is the Blue Bloods. I guess a lot of people that are underdogs like me, they didn't make it. Duke and Kentucky, can't believe they're not in the tournament. First time the two of them have not been in the tournament since 1976.
Right. Yeah, and I think there's a reason for that. And I've talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it on this show last time, but those kids, when you'd only have them for a short period of time, it's really important that you maximize your time. They didn't come in at the semester last year, which normally some of them do. They didn't get there at the beginning of the summer, which normally they all do. They didn't have fall practice. They had conditioning and individual workouts, but they didn't have that fall practice that they normally have. They didn't have any international trips, where a lot of bonding takes place and a lot of coaching takes place and a lot of progress with all that takes place. Then they had a limited, if at all, non-conference schedule. Right. So they didn't have time to have any of that. And I think that really kept a lot of teams from being as good as they could be. But I think it affected those teams that have the one and doneers and are dependent on freshmen in a big way. There was a week this year where the top 10 schools, their 50 starters, 45 of them were juniors or seniors.
Wow.
That's how important experience was handling a year like this year, and the fact that those kids were just older and they weren't depending on freshmen and newcomers to help them have success.
Right, Coach. And the very fact is, I'm hearing, but maybe you're a basketball guy, hopefully you have the answer or no. But I'm hearing the NBA is going to change the one-and-done rule. Thank God. I the way I feel about it is, look at LeBron James. I know that the rule was not in place, but LeBron is one of the best players ever to play the game, and he would have had to go to college for a year. If they're good enough to go, let them go. I mean, that's just the way I feel. And if they do come in, I hope they have something like baseball and football where you could, like, potentially skip your senior year. But have something that in place, because that's one of the things that drives me crazy is that we say student-athlete all the time, student-athlete, but then is it really student-athlete if a guy can go to a Duke or Kentucky? They only have to pass one semester of college, and after the spring semester, they really don't have to go to classes anymore.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and we have talked about this on the show. Baseball got it right. If you want to go, go. If you don't want to go to college, but stay 3 years. I think that would be great for everybody. It would certainly be good for the college game. And I think it would probably be better for the NBA, too. They're going to get a more finished product, and probably the G League will improve, and there'll probably be some other alternatives out there. There's a push right now for a league for high school kids to go play in and get paid while they're in high school. Forget AAU, forget high school. Just go ahead, and if that's what you want to do, you go ahead and make this commitment to those folks. So, I'm 100% for the baseball rule. Those Major League Baseball and college baseball, however they worked it out, I wish we could work it out for college basketball.
And baseball, Coach, has their own problems with MLB. Hopefully we'll have baseball after this season, but that's a whole other show, as they say. I could talk about that for – I'm not going to go down that road. But here's another one Bubba brings up, Oregon State winning Pac-12, their second bid ever. I forgot to mention that. Thank you, Bubba. That's why he's a great producer in addition to – our co-host. How about them? How about Oregon State, the Beavers?
Yeah, that they were a neat story, and everybody had kind of written them off, and they hung in there and did a really good job. And I caught a little bit of their action in the Pac-12 tournament. They've got a pretty darn good basketball team, and of course, beating Oregon along the way to the championship, I sure did. I'm sure that didn't hurt their feelings any either.
Here's another one that I didn't realize. This I did not realize. How about the Big Ten becoming the first league to ever get four top two seeds?
I did not realize that. I didn't realize that. And there was some talk at different times where they might have three number ones. But I had not realized. But it was such a great year in the Big Ten,
yeah.
Michigan and Illinois. Everybody getting going. Ohio State was good, and they were deep and good. The entire league was very, very good, and they beat up on each other, and their tournament was fun to watch. I normally just catch maybe the championship game in the Big Ten, but I turned in for some early round matchups because they had a lot of games that mattered.
It really did, and happy for them, because when you think Big Ten, you normally think, Coach, you would think about football, but basketball has been great for them. Bubba even chimed in about the ACC never have done that, which is true. It's a surprise. I guess we live in ACC country.
Yeah.
You would think that it would have already done that before number twos, but they haven't. And so, and the fact that, and that's another thing, maybe I'm old school and I understand the whole TV deal and all that, but the ACC having 15 schools, it just seems like it's watered down now compared to what it used to be. But I'm one of the old school guys, on that one. I understand there you have to have as many teams for money and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy that the little trivia thing about the ACC tournament. This was the first time they ever had a championship game without at least one of the original eight members in the game. Georgia Tech and Florida State obviously not being original members, but a lot of folks think Georgia Tech is. They've been on a while, but they were not. And it wasn't a great year in the ACC, and it wasn't a great year in the SEC. The Big 12 and the Big Ten were the best two leagues, I think, pretty decidedly.
You have an idea about, are there some surprise teams, maybe some dark horse teams that you're looking at when you're filling out your bracket? You say, Dave, you better watch out for that team.
I hate to sound like this, and it won't be a popular thing to say in Eastern North Carolina, but you know who I think can make a run is UNC. I really do. I would not be shocked if they don't get all the way to the Final Four. And they haven't had that kind of year. They've been inconsistent, and maybe their guard play will hold them back. But I thought they were playing better than anybody else once they got to the tournament. And their game with Florida State in the semis was just an absolute war. It was a great game, and both of them playing at a really high level. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Florida State make a run either. So, we're talking about the ACC having a down year, but a couple teams that might make a run. But, so much is going to depend on who gets a break. Look at Georgia Tech and Florida State play for the ACC championship. What do they have in common? They each got a bye during the tournament. They each got a game that they didn't have to play. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, and the fact, Coach, let's talk about Georgia Tech. They had not made the tournament in a long, long time, a number of years, just to make the tournament. And then they win the ACC, which, I mean, nobody saw that coming. I mean, but really happy for them in Atlanta because they have a lot of passionate fans. I know they're in the ATL and the Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech. They made it to the championship and they got it done. They beat a really good Florida State team.
Sure did. And, Alvarado and DeVoe and the big guy in the middle, they kind of quietly had a solid year. Josh Pastner, I mean, there were a lot of folks thinking he was on the hot seat coming into this year, and now he's the ACC tournament champion, and he's a very nice guy, and happy for him and those kids. And they went into the tournament with a 9% chance of going to the NCAA, and they're the ACC tournament champions.
Coach, wanted to ask you as far as Gonzaga's concerned, one of the things I've heard, and Bubba brought that to my attention as well, a lot of the talk I'm hearing with sports talk and just people on the street is, will Gonzaga become the first team since Indiana, Coach Knight's team, to go undefeated like back in 76?
Yeah, and I think they have a great chance to. And we got to say it right, Gonzaga. They're a little sensitive about Gonzaga instead of Gonzaga, but yeah, I think they have a chance. I think, and if I had to bet my own money, I would bet on them versus the field. And that sounds crazy, but they take the first shot in their offense every 14 seconds. They average 90 points a game in league play. They're really a good – I mean, they beat Virginia, who's the number one seed in the ACC tournament, by 30-something. They are a great basketball team, and they probably have four NBA players. They have at least three first-round picks, a couple lottery picks. That they're for real. I know they didn't play the same schedule as some of the folks in the Power Five league, so to speak, but they're a really good basketball team. And, I'm not going to be shocked at all if they're sitting there cutting down the nets for the first time.
And it's long overdue, right? I mean, that program has been good for how long, Coach? I mean, yeah. Good ball.
Since the 90s, they haven't missed a tournament in a long time.
Yeah, so it's not like it's a surprise.
Yeah.
It's not really a Cinderella as far as like a team that has come out of nowhere and they win it like a NC State in 83, Villanova 85, one of those Cinderella teams that have won it. This is a team that just steady, they've been climbing the ladder, so to speak.
You know, and it's crazy how things go. That right before they made their first NCAA appearance, there was a real debate about whether they should commit and stay in Division One or be a Division Three school. That's how they were close to going the other way. The sentiment was they probably were gonna scale things back. And look at what happened when they jumped in there and made a commitment.
One of the things that drives me crazy is such a great team as they are in a great program. They can't help the conference they play in, and everybody talks about what is the WCC, but. That, in other words, to me, that's a slap in the face. That offense, what I've seen, I haven't seen a lot of their games, but what I've seen of it is very entertaining. I've heard many people say that's true. They're very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, and it isn't like they don't go out and play the hardest schedule they can play during the non-conference part of the schedule. They can't control the conference part, but what they can control, they challenge themselves. And I think you got to give them a lot of credit because they could duck everybody until the NCAA tournament if they wanted to, but they don't do that. They try to play the toughest non-conference schedule they can.
And they win those, and they're winning those non-conference games too, right? I mean, didn't they beat Kansas?
Beat Kansas, beat West Virginia, beat Virginia. Yeah. Had a game scheduled with Baylor that didn't get played because of COVID, and they tried to schedule Villanova when they had a pause situation going on. They tried to schedule even additional games to what they had to start with.
Coach, as far as your Final Four, do you have a Final Four that you can share with us?
I do, and it probably makes no sense, and you all will probably laugh at me, but I do. I have Gonzaga playing Florida State in one bracket, and I have Carolina playing Illinois in the other.
So the Carolina-Illinois would be a rematch of the 2005 National Championship game, which Carolina cut down the nets.
There you go. There you go.
So you think – and the great thing about the Final Four, if you're a Tar Heel fan – is once you get to the Final Four, it's like its own tournament, right, Coach? I mean, it's like once you get there, anything can happen.
Oh, no question. No question. We see it every year that, it doesn't matter what you're ranked at that point, who's playing well. And if you're playing on that last weekend, or I guess now it'll be even further into the week, but if you're playing that in those Final Four, you've beaten some good basketball teams. Nobody gets there as a fluke. Whether it's VCU or George Mason or Loyola of Chicago or Butler or whoever we're talking about.
And I wonder if there are any prop bets, speaking of prop bets, the NCAA tournament, on if the tournament, all the games will be played without any pause and interruption.
I bet you you can bet on it in Vegas for sure.
Well, I wouldn't put a lot of money on that because it looks like that's going to be problem. As far as those referees, have you heard any more those six. That one thing I was going to ask you early on, and I forgot, is those guys, and we give them a hard time as coaches and fans and all, but in all seriousness, those guys are really dedicated people. They have full-time jobs, and then they're balancing, I'm sure, families. They're balancing a full-time job, and then they've got a lot of travel, right, where they have to keep in shape because you're running an average. People don't realize an average, you know this, coach, an average basketball team, they're running at least 3 miles, which is a 5K every game, at least 3 miles. And if it goes in overtime, it's even more than that.
Yeah, those guys, it's amazing that we haven't had any real issues with officials. And of course, they have a good roster, and they can plug people in when there are problems with either travel or maybe a positive. But I haven't heard that many. I think they've done a great job of taking precautions and getting to where they're supposed to go. And I think a lot of them drove more this year than they normally do because they just didn't want to be on planes and that kind of thing. They wanted to be a little bit safer, but that meant some late nights leaving after games. And I think one thing that helped the officials this year was, and television cooperated with this, was so many teams didn't want to play those late games. So they played it. You could any day of the week, you could catch a game at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, and allow those teams to get home and not spend another night in a hotel, get back. And one thing I didn't know was a lot of teams traveled with 2 buses instead of 1 for basketball. Because if you want a seat in front of you open and 1 behind you open and 1 beside you open, you can only get 6 or 7 players on a bus. But a lot of teams made that commitment, and of course the expense of staying in single hotel rooms. But the whole travel thing was for the officials was pretty intriguing, and you got to give those guys a lot of credit. I gave them a lot of hell when I was coaching, but I tell them all the time when I sit on the other side where TV is, they're a lot better from that other angle.
No doubt. By the way, Coach, we have a fan chiming in. If you have a question, comment on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you can do so on Facebook. We have one from Johnny Robertson, Coach. He says, Tennessee's John Fulkerson may miss part or all of the NCAA tournament due to the results of a flagrant 2 foul administered by Florida's Omar Payne. What do you think of a rule change that would dictate that if you cause an injury due to a flagrant foul, you must miss as many games as a player that you injured?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, there are penalties for a flagrant foul, and you know, and there can be ejections, which would you know, result in missing a game. But yeah, that, I don't know how you would necessarily enforce that one, but yeah, that's the common sense thing. You cost this guy 3 games or 4 games or 5 games. You should have to sit out the same number of games. That it makes some sense. It really does.
No doubt. It's strange that very thing about how that we do that. One other thing I want to talk to you about, which I know we always talk about, but I've heard so much about the transfer portal, about the one-time transfer rule where you don't have to worry about sitting out the first time you transfer. Just have you had any more thought about that? More conversations with people about? I'm very worried about it. I'm very old school on that. I'm afraid that it's already a problem with transferring. I just think that's going to be a huge explosion now.
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all of the waiver and the one-time waiver thing. I think it's going to be chaos. I really do. I think you're going to see a lot of meddling, if you will. I think you'll see people trying to get in touch with kids back door, and I'm very concerned with the coaches being able to really coach their team. I mean, every player I've ever coached would have been mad at me enough to leave at some point. I know they would have. Now, if the transfer portal was available, would those kids have left? I don't know. I mean, you know, we were winning a lot of games at Auburn, and we won a lot of games at Chattanooga, and won some games at VCU. Maybe they wouldn't have left because of the quality of the program and they liked the experience. But, gosh, I think it's too easy for kids to quit when it's like that. I am afraid of that, and I'm even more afraid of the name, image, and likeness thing. And I understand why something needs to be done. But boy, the devil's in the details on that. I think we're going to see, I don't know. First of all, the NCAA hasn't had a lot of success in enforcing the rules they have now.
Right.
Who's going to enforce and supervise the name, image, likeness program? And I haven't gotten good answers on that either.
Well, why wouldn't it be, to me personally, Coach, I've always said from my role in that is I believe they are amateurs and I understand they make money for the schools. So why can't they do some kind of annuity or some kind of thing where they say, all right, you made this amount of money on a jersey. We'll give it to you after you graduate, or we'll give it to you after you're no longer a part of the university. And they would have the money so that way they wouldn't be an amateur. They would still keep their amateur status, and in the back end, they would still get paid.
Okay. And it's easy to point out the problems with any rule that you have. But, for instance, Johnny Manziel was number 7, right? Mm-hmm. They're still selling that number 7. Does Johnny Manziel keep getting the money, or does the poor kid who's not playing at all, who wears number 7, does he get any of that money?
Well, yeah,
I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. And here's one that I haven't heard discussed at all. You talked about schools making money. So now if I want to put who's the best football player on the team coming back? Ehlers.
Ehlers, yeah.
Put Ehlers on the media guide. Do I have to pay him to do it?
And what about the problems you have also, Coach, with, as Kyle has brought up in the past, of let's say Ehlers. He gets money from the car dealerships and different places around town.
Yeah.
He had an offensive lineman who has helped block for him. He's like, usually the offensive and defensive line are very, I would say, underdogs, if you want to, when it comes to the popularity. People most likely, unfortunately, don't know their names unless they make mistakes. But who's to say that guy, why does he deserve, you're blocking for Ehlers. So yeah. Why does he deserve the same amount as that's, I'm not anti-Ehlers. I like sure. Him and his dad. Morgan a lot. I'm just saying that the very fact of I feel like you're opening up, as you're mentioning, Pandora's box, because there's a lot of potential. What I fear is someone that's played and coached. I feel there's going to be a lot of maybe internally in the locker room, there's going to be some hard feelings there. It may not be mean. It may not amount to anything. But that's something I worry about. They have a right to make money, for sure. But as far as for me, how is that going to play out as far as fairness? And then as far as how does Title IX figure in there? If you have, for example, the male athletes usually make the money and the female athletes are on Olympic sport teams, is there going to be fairness there? Or is there any kind of revenue sharing? I don't know. Those are thoughts I've had that I don't know. I know our friend David Glenn is going to be with us on Thursday night. Maybe I can ask him about that. He has more of a idea. That stuff, he's a lawyer, so I'm not, and probably thank goodness I'm not. But I have friends that are lawyers, so I'm not anti-lawyers. But anyway, Coach, I want to plug your book again for all the people before we let you go. I love you the time. We can talk to you for hours, but give the name of the book, and I'm going to buy it on Amazon once we're done.
You have to go to MacMcCarthy.com to get the book.
Or MacMcCarthy.com.
Yep, go to MacMcCarthy.com. But the book is called What I'm About to Tell You is the Truth or Could Be. And it's just kind of a recap of my career and life and how I got to where I'm at and what I got to do along the way. And it was a lot of fun to write. I hope it's fun to read, but I know it was a lot of fun to write.
No question about it. And, Coach, we appreciate you so much for being on. And we ask you a pre-show, I think, but you said you're not going to be doing it for fans out there. You're not going to be doing any March Madness games, right?
Yeah, my season's over and it had nothing to do with COVID.
All right, you're going to be traveling around with being a NASCAR fan, right?
I will see as many races as I can see. I got lucky in the lottery and got tickets to the both races in Martinsville. So
wow,
I'm excited.
All right, well, get that grandfather clock for me, can you? All right. Thank you so much, Coach. Appreciate it, and we'll have you on again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Dave.
All right, had a great time. Coach Mac McCarthy here on our show. Appreciate him very, very much, and as we always like having Coach on, and he's so much fun and all about life. And we appreciate him. With all the craziness going on, we had to have an expert like Coach. He's forgotten more about basketball than I will ever know, for sure. Well, let's switch some gears now. In fact, we're going to go now about, we're going to talk some baseball. The Pirates have a big game coming up, and that'll be on tomorrow night. And look forward to that. And that's going to be a lot of fun. The Pirates are going to be taking on UNCW, and that'll be in Wilmington. We know about what happened there. And let's see now if we can go. Let's go now to our interview we had with Coach Randy Hood. And let's go to that interview right now. Well, very excited to have here on deck with us as the Pirates have a big game on the road at Brooks Field tomorrow night. And that's Wednesday night. And that'll be with us right now, the head baseball coach of UNCW, Randy Hood. Coach, how are you?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks. Appreciate it.
No doubt. I was just talking to you as we're recording this. You guys haven't had rain in quite a while. And right before the game, a day before the game, I know it's the life of a baseball coach, right? It starts raining.
Oh, yeah. We up until the last week and a half, we've actually had a really wet winter and early spring. But finally got some good days and a lot of drying out. And then looks like we're getting rain most of the day today and then again on Thursday. But I think we'll be fine for tomorrow's game.
Coach, I was just telling you pre-show right before we started this interview, pre-interview, if you will, that this game with East Carolina and Wilmington is always a big rivalry, a big game. And last year, you know, a really great game for you guys as you get a walk-off. And then all of a sudden, I know the East Carolina, when they were driving down there, found out that Columbia was canceling the games. So they're scrambling around the last 30 minutes of the bus ride trying to find games. And then they have the walk-off, and then they're like, okay, we'll find another opponent. They have another opponent, and then, oh, by the way, the season's canceled. I think you guys had a similar thing happen, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, that week was the first week things started really kind of being talked around the whole country about potential, you know, issues with COVID and things like that. And when Cliff got there for batting practice, you know, he mentioned to me pregame that he felt like their series with, I think it was Columbia, right, was going to get canceled. And he wanted to know who we were playing and if there's any way potentially we could do like a three-team deal. And said he was just trying to figure out because, you know, obviously 3 days from there, he didn't know exactly what was happening. So played the game, unbelievable college baseball game, 2-2 going into the ninth. And we got a couple guys on and then, you know, got a big hit from Matt Suggs. And, you know, that was a great way to win a big game against a very, very good program. And like you said, our rivals and in-state type rivals. But, you know, after that, you know, I'm sitting out there around 10 or 11 o'clock, just kind of hanging out with the field guys and enjoying the win. And then, you know, the next morning I get a call to go in and sit down with administrators. And we've got East Tennessee State driving from you know, their place to our place. We're going to practice on Thursday night. And by 10 a.m., I told them to just kind of, you know, keep your phones next to you. And by 1 o'clock Thursday afternoon, we called and told them to turn around. They were already in Greensboro. Wow. And then 24 hours later on Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock, I was meeting with our team and telling them the season was canceled. So things happened very quickly after that that Wednesday night game.
Crazy stuff. And obviously you guys have always had a great program. And now you're heading up. By the way, folks, you can, if you want to see our D1 preview we did with Coach, with Bubba and Coach, we have that as well in our archives. You can check that out. Coach, I know so far you've been, home has been very kind to you. 10-3, you're receiving votes now. Let's talk about the season so far. 10-3, and I know you started off with a sweep of VCU, right? Virginia Commonwealth.
Yeah, we, you know, the way things, honestly, our schedule has changed a whole lot since last June, and it was very fluid basically from June up until the start of the season, with, you know, people not being able to play, things like that. We were luckily, most of the teams that we had originally early in the season were able to still come and play us. But, you know, we originally had, you know, the first four weekends, three of those weekends playing four games on the weekend. And that's why we didn't schedule any midweeks because I felt like we would, you know, be fine playing four games through the first four weekends. As it played out, we only played three with VCU, three with Western. We did play four with Cincinnati, and then three this past weekend with App State. But yeah, we have got off to a good start. You know, I feel like we're kind of right where we're at based on how we've played. We could have easily won another game against Cincinnati or lost a game. That was a series that kind of a lot of things kind of went back and forth. But you know, I think 10-3 is kind of where we are at. We've played really good defense. Our pitching's been, you know, pretty solid, and we finally got some really good starts from our top two guys this past weekend. You know, we've done just enough hitting wise to score enough runs to win games.
Speaking of which, Kermit Smith's done a great job. I know they're working really hard to build that program, and Boone and Appalachian State, you sweep the Mountaineers, and now you have the Pirates coming back. In fact, I know that coaches don't care about polls, but you're actually receiving votes. I know as a baseball nerd, you're receiving votes in the polls. So I'm sure it's great for the fans, for the Seahawk fans to see the you're getting some love.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we want to be a top 25 type program year in and year out, you know, and I think around the country, a lot of people recognize that we have a very, very good program here. We've been to, you know, 10 regionals the last 17 years and still knocking on the door to win a regional, but I think we're getting close. You know, I hear Coach Godwin say it all the time. We have the same goals. We want to win a national championship. It's been proven several years ago, right down the road at Coastal Carolina, it can easily be done. It's not easy. I wouldn't say that, but it can be done at mid-major programs. But we think baseball-wise, we're not a mid-major. We feel like we're a major-type program and got a lot of good kids and talented kids that play at the next level and get drafted very high. But, yeah, to get some votes is nice. Hopefully we can keep winning and keep playing quality teams and hopefully move on up the polls. But, you know, the polls are, like you said, mainly for the fans, but it's nice to get the attention.
We're going to talk about your stats and some players in just a minute. I just want to have a question sidebar here for you. How difficult is it to recruit a kid to go to Wilmington? It's such a great city. The Port City's great. I have friends that live there, and whenever I get a chance, I visit Wilmington, love Wilmington. So how difficult is it to get to – I guess you have to get the right kid for your program, but yeah. It can't be too hard to recruit there.
No, I mean, you know, we look at certain things as far as makeup and grades and athletic ability and the baseball side of it. All that comes into play. But obviously our location, a beautiful campus, history of our program speaks a lot of volume for, you know, kids and people that want to come to play at a good place. You know, our biggest challenge and my challenge as a coach and fundraisers, we've just got to continue to do a better job upgrading our facilities and keeping up with a lot of people because, you know, outside of the things I just mentioned, the facility, the wow factor is huge in the recruiting side. So I want us as a program and as a university to just keep pushing that envelope and doing what we need to do to keep up with, you know, the top programs in the country.
And Coach, being a fan of coaches, what do you need for Seahawk fans or people listening right now that maybe want to give you some money? What do you need? What are your wants, if you will, your wish list?
Well, I would say first is, you know, Brooks Field has been here since 1970 and hadn't had a ton of major renovations other than just some cosmetic things that we've done with the outfield wall and the side walls and different things like that. But, you know, it needs some tender love and care to it. You know, whether it's, you know, kind of redoing the stadium and the field. And obviously, I would love to see a big video board. I think we're well overdue of getting a nice video board to kind of make our fan experience more up to date. And then just, you know, little things that, you know, we're starting to outgrow our field house a little bit and, you know, potentially upgrading locker rooms, offices, things like that. But the biggest thing would be the field, the stadium and, you know, the scoreboard type deal. I'd love to get something there to just improve the overall fan experience.
And one of my favorite things to do in the summertime, spring and summer, Coach, is no matter where it is, even, you know, locally where I live, I even love watching T-ball games. The little kids running around, scrambling like a scrum, like a rugby scrum for the ball. All the way up to college and the majors. So definitely fans. If you're a Seahawk fan, then give Coach Hood some money. Give him some love, and let's get the video board for sure. Let's talk some stats. I could talk about facilities all day long. But I know that Kip Brandenburg, I have some notes here. He's batting over 400 with seven doubles.
Yeah. He's been very, very outstanding and just solid. I mean, he's been consistent. I'm not going to try to jinx anything, but I think he does have a hitting streak going on dating back from last year. But his just approach over the summer into the fall, into the spring, has just been outstanding. And a lot of people don't even realize, but he's very athletic and he can play a lot of positions for us, but he's such a great first baseman. He makes our defense that much better, just being defensively sound at first base and athletic. But on the hitting side of it, he's just, you know, made a few adjustments and, you know, he's got a lot more contact going in there. It's cut down on his swing and he tends to get a lot of extra base hits and drive in runs, and that's important for us.
No doubt. I was. I'm keep looking at my notes to make sure that my eyes are not playing tricks on me. Brooks Baldwin. He has a team high 5 home runs already early on.
Yeah, he's our leadoff hitter, and he's already had 3 first inning leadoff home runs this year. Wow. Which, you know, I don't know any stats around the country, but it's got to be up there. But it's nice to be able to get out on the board early. He has the potential to do that, and you know, he's just been. He's kind of our utility guy. He's played right field, center field, shortstop, second base, first base. He was our starting shortstop last year, but he just gives us a lot of flexibility. Extremely athletic young man that has done a really good job setting the table for us at the top of the lineup.
Coach, let's talk about pitching. We all know how big that role plays. You got to have bats, but you also have to have pitching, the defense. Can you talk about your pitchers so far, how they've done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think just from a starting standpoint, because we played on weekends, you know, we've gone with our, you know, who we think our 1, 2, and 3 guy is. And then the Cincinnati weekend, we threw a 4th starter out there. You know, that Landon Roop and Luke Giselle are our top 2 arms. They're 2 of the best pitchers in our league. Landon was preseason CA player of the year. Probably hadn't been Landon Roop like the first couple outings, but the last outing was outstanding against App this past weekend. And again, he hadn't been bad, but he just hadn't been what everyone expects, a shutdown kind of person. And he was that this weekend, and I think he's back on the right track. And you know, if we got him and Luke at the front end of our rotation, we've got a chance to really go in and win a lot of series. And then we started 2 freshmen in that 3rd and 4th slot, and both of them have done, you know, a solid job. They got to continue to do a, you know, learn and get the experience, but got bright futures for us, Ryan Calvert and Jacob Schaefer. But just from a overall pitching standpoint, you know, we've had some relievers that have really been good for us. And, you know, like I said, for the get go, if we pitch it well, we're going to play good defense. And, you know, we might not score 10 or 15 runs, but we might, you know, beat a lot of teams 7-2, 7-3, that kind of score.
Now, Coach, I know Hunter Hodges and Bryce Cota, my notes have been excellent out of the bullpen.
You were just talking about the bullpen. Hunter's a local freshman here from New Hanover High School. Has been really great for us out of the gate. Strong body, young freshman. He's got a good fastball, but a plus breaking ball that you know, allows him to really put some people away. And then Bryce Cota, from this area, Topsail High School, was started at Campbell, transferred here as a grad student this past year. His brother played here and is now in pro ball, but Bryce has been solid from the left side. And then I feel like we've got one of the top closers in the country, Adam Smith. He pitched against you guys there at last year in that 7th and 8th inning, but he was a shortstop that we moved to the mound last year, and he'll get drafted this year as a pitcher. And he was up to 96, 97 this past weekend. So, you know, just very athletic, still got a lot of innings left in his body. So, you know, just it's fun to watch him mature and develop over the course of the time that he's here in our program.
No doubt about it. And we were talking about that's what the success, we were talking about facilities, recruiting is obviously big. Tell us what you know about East Carolina. I know that they're with this rivalry, Coach, there really are no secrets, are there?
No, I mean, I joke with a lot of people, like in our conference, because it's spread out and there's a lot of different recruiting footprints, we don't really recruit a lot against teams in our conference. We recruit mainly against our in-state rivals, East Carolina, North Carolina, NC State, teams like that. So those are the teams that I know a lot about their players and guys that they bring in, because that's a lot of kids that we're also recruiting also. East Carolina, Southeastern North Carolina, grew up in Goldsboro and Southern Wayne High School. And, you know, East Carolina's always had a great, great, great baseball program. It dates back to Coach Overton and then Coach LeClaire, and there's been plenty of coaches, and Cliff has just kind of kept that rolling and even taken it to a different level. And, very, very solid nationally ranked program right now. It's going to be great bringing a top 10 team into our facility tomorrow. They just always come, they're ready to compete. They're fundamentally sound. They don't beat you. They don't beat themselves in a lot of areas from a pitching standpoint, from a defensive standpoint. And it just seems like they're always putting pressure on you from an offensive side. So, I haven't personally watched a ton of video. I know they've got some guys playing very well and pitching very well. And obviously 13-2 against the schedule they've played speaks volumes. So we got our hands full, but it'll be fun, and I think we're all looking forward to it.
A couple more questions before we let you go, Coach. I know you're busy getting ready for the big game, and I don't know if you had to roll out the tarp, but I'm sure that you have to deal with all that kind of stuff. As far as capacity, 30%, is that still the case? I know it's a North Carolina rule, being the state of North Carolina rule. What are your policies as far as fans? Is that for Seahawk, the club there, or who gets in to watch the game?
Yeah, we did put the tarp on last night, so we're good in that part of it. But we're at the 30%, but I think our university kind of looks at it as a socially distanced 30%. So it might not be like if our stadium says we hold 3,500, we're not getting 1,000 people in there. Right now, I think our capacity is at 500. Obviously we have a pass list for our student athletes. We give the visiting team a pass list as well. And then the rest of the tickets are sold, through our Seahawk club. And then I think they do a game day, open it up around 2 PM and do some type of, sell the rest of the general admission seats out. But, we've kind of reached that capacity about every game. Obviously, I know East Carolina has a ton of fans that love to travel. So, the best thing I would do is suggest them is go to our Seahawk UNCW Sports athletic page for tickets and just go through the ticket opportunities there and what's available. And hopefully, we can have a big crowd.
No doubt about it. And the toughest question, I saved the best for last. Who's the starting pitcher for Wednesday night? Are you going to tell us?
Yeah, we're Cliff already texted me yesterday and told me that he was going to go staff. He knew it would start with a right-hander, but I probably wouldn't throw but one or two innings and then throw a lot of guys. But we're going to start Jacob Schaefer, a freshman that we started against Cincinnati, and hopefully get, as many innings as possible, and then go to the bullpen and see where we're at. But he's deserved it. He's ready. He's got a big future for us, and it'd be a great outing for him to go out there and see how he competes against a top 10 program.
Well, Coach, thanks so much for the sit down here on deck here on the Sports Objective. Good luck to tonight, Wednesday night, and it'll be a lot of fun. I know anytime the Pirates and Seahawks get together, it's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully we can talk to you again real soon.
I appreciate it, Dave. And thank you for the time. And thanks for all you guys do for baseball. And look forward to seeing and getting after it tomorrow night.
Want to give a shout out to, by the way, Next Level Training Center, where players play. And they play where players train, I should say. Give them a call at 252-756-NEXT. 252-756-NEXT. And also you can go to nextleveltc.com, their Facebook page. We appreciate Trent Brett and everybody for all that they're doing for training for folks. And they actually sponsor our extra innings show every Sunday night. And another great friend is Mark McCauzy. I appreciate him for pgxgloves.com. You can get custom baseball gloves, batting gloves, personalized stuff, youth. They have football gloves. They have golf gloves, swag. And again, it's founded by Pirates great Mark Minakazi. And they've been so good to us with not only the 23 Jungle Tales, but now for the PGX Player of the Week and the PGX Pitcher of the Week. And that's every Sunday night. So if you haven't had a chance, check that out. It's been a lot of fun to have Mark Minakazi and all his crew there at pgxgloves.com. And we mentioned Next Level Training Center, where players train. Again, give them a call at 252-756-NEXT. Well, our next show will be coming up Thursday nights, and we appreciate you joining us tonight or whenever you're listening to your favorite podcast. You can anywhere you hear your favorite podcast, and of course, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. On Thursday night, we'll have a great show starting at 7 o'clock. We have David Glenn. He'll be with us, and we'll have also Coach Holm from Illinois State as we preview the Illinois State series coming up this weekend at Clark LeClair Stadium, and that'll be all coming up on Thursday night. All right, until next time, I appreciate Bubba Rosenbaum for being behind the scenes. Thank you, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, and Coach Mac McCarthy. Again, enjoyed it. Have a great night, everybody, and as always, go Pirates.